This is Progressive Radio, a weekly conversation hosted by Matthew Rothschild, editor of The Progressive Magazine, a leading voice for peace and social justice. For more information about Progressive Radio or The Progressive Magazine, log on to our website at progressive.org.
I'm Matt Rothschild, and welcome to Progressive Radio. Today we're going to be talking about the Green Party, and with me in the studio is David Cobb, who's running for the Green Party nomination for president. David Cobb, welcome to Progressive Radio.
Thank you, Matt.
Why are you running?
Well, I'm running because the Green Party is the electoral arm of the growing movement for peace, social justice, grassroots democracy, and ecology in this country.
How long have you been involved in it?
Well, I've been a Green Party organizer, I guess, since 1997. I came to the Green Party in 1996 when Ralph Nader stood for nomination for the Green Party. It's a great story. I had formerly worked on Jesse Jackson's campaign in 84 and 88, Jerry Brown's campaign in 92. I'd quit electoral politics in disgust until I heard Ralph Nader's speech. And in 1996, Ralph Nader brought me into the Green Party movement. And I began the process of attempting to organize a local Green Party because there wasn't one, and basically have been at it since 97.
And what was your role in 2000?
Well, in 2000, I coordinated a ballot access drive in order to earn Ralph Nader and the Green Party ballot access in the state of Texas. In order to do that, we had to collect a minimum of 38,000 valid signatures. Now, to be a valid signature, the signer had to be already registered to vote, but had not voted in the Democratic or Republican Party primary. So in other words, Matt, the person had to care enough to register to vote, but have not participated in voting. And the big kicker is we had 75 days to collect those signatures.
And that's a lot of signatures. How did you find these peculiar people?
Well, we did it with organization, inspiration, and perspiration. You know, that's the recipe that the grassroots organizers and social change activists have known all along.
A little exasperation, too, probably.
A little bit of that, but you know what? You do that when you come across that, you got to pick yourself up and keep on going. I'm proud to tell you, Matt, that in that 75-day window, I coordinated a virtual all-volunteer effort that collected 76,100 signatures.
I'm speaking with David Cobb, who's running for the Green Party nomination. I'm Matt Rothschild. You're listening to Progressive Radio. Reflect back on the 2000 campaign, because you must have heard at least 1,000 times that the Green Party gave us George W. Bush.
Right. Well, that's, you know, my first, I've got a series of responses, as you can well imagine, Matt. The first is, let's acknowledge that the Supreme Court gave us George W. Bush. Al Gore won the election. That's probably the most important point to make right up front. He won the election even though there was a conspiracy to disenfranchise hundreds of thousands of mostly African-American voters in Florida. And even against that attempt to steal the election in advance, Gore won the election. He won the Electoral College. It's very clear. Yet, to Al Gore's shame and discredit, he did not fight for what he had won. He allowed the Supreme Court to steal it. In what can only be properly described as a judicial coup d'etat, George W. Bush was installed illegitimately into the White House. That's the first point that I like to make. The second point that I like to make is that we know from exit polling that at least 300,000 registered Democrats voted for George W. Bush. Clearly, a huge hemorrhaging from within the Democratic Party to vote for Bush himself. The third point to make is that Al Gore couldn't win his own home state of Tennessee. You know, there were so many missteps that the Gore campaign made. To blame it on Ralph Nader at the Green Party is really a deep denial on the part of the Democratic Party leadership.
And yet I sometimes say, I mean, I voted for Nader myself, and I was a supporter of the Nader campaigns for a long time. And sometimes in a defiant mood, I will say, yes, you know, Nader did cost Gore the election. And at some point, people had to stand up and say to the Democrats, you just can't take this party further and further right without paying some cost, and you paid a cost.
Well, that's true, Matt. And because what I was going to actually get to in that litany was to acknowledge that it is important for the Green Party and Well, Ralph Nader will make his own decisions about what to do. But I think as a Green Party organizer, it's important for the Green Party to take some ownership for the fact that we do have a growing power, and that that power can be exercised to, quote, spoil elections. And what I'm telling Democratic Party folks who are concerned about the Green Party, if you think that we are a problem, then there is a solution. The solution is instant runoff voting and proportional representation. We need to change this voting system. Matt, how can it really be a problem for the Green Party, who's advancing a genuine progressive agenda and bringing literally millions of people to the polling places who would not otherwise vote? How in the world can our presence really be a problem? It shouldn't be a problem. And in fact, if anybody thinks it is a problem, they better watch out, because we're getting larger, stronger, and better organized with every election cycle. We are growing, and we are going to continue to exercise our right to participate in elections. I am urging Democrats and Republicans, for that matter, change the voting system to make it more democratic, move towards instant runoff voting and proportional representation. We stand ready and willing to work with Democrats, Republicans, and Libertarians and Independents to change our voting system.
David Cobb, do you get any ever positive reaction from Democrats about instant runoff voting, or are you just shut out as a Green?
No, well, it depends. At the grassroots level, when I walk through and explain instant runoff voting, Democrats, rank and file Democrats, get very excited, and oftentimes they want to work on it. And just as an explanation to the listeners, instant runoff voting is a voting system that allows voters to fully express their choices amongst all the candidates. Rather than just choose one, a voter is allowed to rank order their preferences: my first choice, my second choice, my third choice. It's as we like to say, it's as easy as 1, 2, 3. And really and truly, casting the votes really is that easy. And counting the ballots is equally easy. Simply ask, did anyone get a majority of first place votes? If so, she or he wins. If not, then eliminate the lowest vote getter, because she or he can't win. Redistribute the votes from second choice, and see if anybody won. It's a very easy system. And rank-and-file Democrats love it. Democratic consultants don't like it, and those are the ones who we usually have to fight.
Well, let's look ahead. Here we are in 2004, and George W. Bush, to my mind and the mind of a lot of other people, has been a disaster. And so how are you going to contend with the spoiler question this time around?
Well, Matt, I want to first acknowledge that George W. Bush is a problem. In fact, he's a big problem. But Matt, George Bush is not the problem. The problem is a social, political, and economic system that's literally destroying the planet and creating a racist, classist, sexist, and unjust world order with the plunder. That's what the problem is. The Green Party is poised to grow and build to solve the problem, but we have to address the fact that George Bush is a problem, and I'm articulating a very nuanced, nimble strategy based on 50 different states and election codes and the District of Columbia. And I want to run a campaign that grows the Green Party, helps increase party membership, creates and maintains existing ballot lines, does all those things, nuts and bolts level, to grow the Green Party, and ultimately culminates the race with George W. Bush out of the White House.
So is this the so-called safe strategy that I've heard about or read about, where Greens won't contest aggressively in states that are really on the bubble, but will go in states that are either clearly Democratic, like New York or California, or clearly like Republican, like your home state, clearly Republican, like Texas?
Well, Matt, it's been described that way, but with respect, my strategy is infinitely more nuanced than just a, quote, safe state strategy. I call it a smart state strategy, or an aggressive, full-out smart state strategy. In other words, I'm saying each campaign, first of all, I want to be clear, I'm going to get on as many ballots as I possibly, if I'm the Green Party's nominee, I want the Green Party on as many ballots as we can possibly get. I'm not ceding anything, because there are voters, including in Wisconsin, including in Florida, including in New Mexico, many states that are, quote, battleground states, where voters will not vote for a Democrat. They deserve to have a Green to vote for in those states. However, I am saying I want to create and craft a plan that is customized for each particular state. And as you say, those big populous states that are not battleground states, the whole message there, the whole theme there should be, don't waste your vote on a foregone conclusion. Invest your vote in the future. Invest your vote in the movement. In those other states, we're going to have to look point by point, case by case, to determine if there is a compelling reason to invest the very limited asset of candidate time and money into those states.
But are there some states where your fight to gain ballot access may collide with the objective of getting George W. Bush out of the White House?
Yes, there is, Matt, and I don't want to shy away from that, and I want to grapple with that head on and say my first goal is to grow the Green Party to be able to solve the real problem, and I'm committed to doing that. I want to do it as smartly and intelligently I can, and I would like to be able to also accomplish my secondary goal, which is to run the kind of campaign that culminates with George W. Bush out of the White House. But I want to be very clear to your listeners that to the extent those absolutely collide, I'm going to be going with growing the Green Party.
But David Cobb, I'm sure some of the listeners are going to say, well, I recognize what the guy is saying here about the institutional needs of the Green Party, but those pale in comparison to the need, the urgency of getting George W. Bush out of the White House.
And so, Matt, what I would say is this. If any individual voter at the end of the day believes that they are in a state that could go either way, that they should vote their conscience. And if their conscience says, I want to vote for what I believe in and for what I want, and I'm going to cast a vote for the Green Party in order to build this growing movement, then I will do so. If their conscience tells them they have to hold their nose and vote for a corporatist like Kerry, then they should do that. If their conscience tells them, I like this John Kerry, he stands for everything that I like about the Democratic Party, then he should vote for John Kerry. And frankly, if a voter says, I like George W. Bush and all that he stands for, then they should vote for George W. Bush. You see, Matt, at the end of the day, myself and the Green Party are genuine little d Democrats. We believe in the system, and we want voters to vote for what they want. It's the only way to get it.
Talk to me a little bit, David Cobb, about Ralph Nader's peculiar decision, in my opinion, to leave the Green Party, though he never formally joined it, and run, perhaps run as an independent.
Well, Matt, first of all, I want to say I'm a lawyer because of Atticus Finch and Ralph Nader. Atticus Finch, of course, a fictional character in To Kill a Mockingbird, and Ralph Nader, a real live human being. Has arguably had more influence on my life than anybody who's not directly related to me. He is a personal hero and a public icon of the First Order. And having said that, I am at a loss to understand why in the world Ralph Nader thinks there is anything positive to be accomplished by an independent run. I just don't see it.
Is he going to at all run on Green Party state lines, or is that not going to be possible if he's not formally running for the Green Party nomination?
Well, with respect, only Ralph Nader can say what his intentions are. I can tell you that the Green Party is a democratic organization, and our nominating process has a set of democratic rules, and we'll be going through that process, and we will nominate a candidate in June in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. If Ralph wants to get on any Green Party ballot lines, he should participate in the respectful, robust debate that's going on within the Green Party.
Do you think it's a positive thing ultimately for the Green Party that he's not running? There was some suggestion that just being so closely identified with one person may not be good for the party itself.
Well, you know, that's a provocative question. I mean, I think it's a double-edged sword, Matt. On the one hand, to have the most trusted person in the history of modern America associated with the Green Party was to the good of the Green Party, right? I mean, and certainly without – no single individual has done more than Ralph Nader to help grow the Green Party than Ralph Nader. Having said that, Ralph did run in 96. He ran in 2000, and – I did not personally believe that Ralph would have been the best candidate for the Green Party in 2004. But if he seeks the nomination and wins it, then I would respect the decision of grassroots Greens.
Now, there's a world of difference in name recognition between Ralph Nader and David Cobb. And how big a problem is that going to be if you win the nomination to get people's attention and to gain votes?
Well, you know, remember that my goal is to grow the Green Party, create and maintain existing ballot lines, increase party membership, teach Green Party activists and organizers on the ground, grassroots organizer skills. You know, those are my goals. I can accomplish those goals and, in fact, will accomplish my goals even without the name recognition. So that I really don't believe that that's going to be too much of a problem. And I would encourage the listeners to go to my website at www.votecob.org, where I lay out what my goals are and invite them to participate in this insurgent campaign. So I don't think that the lack of name recognition is going to be the problem that your question suggests.
The Greens, last time Ralph Nader at the top, got 2.7 million votes. Correct me if you think I'm being too harsh, but my expectation is that the Greens this year, leaving aside Nader, will get many fewer votes than that. Is that your expectation as well?
Well, my expectation is this. My expectation is to accomplish my goals. And you'll notice that as I was laying out those goals, my goals did not include a prediction on a certain number of votes. It's, with respect, Matt, the wrong way to look at the Green Party in this stage of our development. The right way to look at a Green Party presidential campaign is, are we going to be able to grow organization, infrastructure, and capacity? And those goals, I am convinced, we'll be able to accomplish, regardless of what our ultimate vote total is.
Talk a little bit about the growth of the Green Party to date.
Well, you know, Matt, that's a great question, because in 1996, there were only 10 organized state Green Parties across the country. Only five of them had a ballot line. In 2000, there were roughly 21 organized state Green Parties. 10 of them had a ballot line. Today, there are 44 organized state Green Parties. 23 of them have a ballot line without having to petition. We'll probably be on somewhere around 35 states by the end of it, I suspect. But the point I'm making is this. We are getting larger, stronger, and better organized with every election cycle. And it's not just nuts and bolts, but we are also running more candidates for office every year and electing more Greens to office every year. Frankly, it is a great untold, unreported story that the Green Party, against all odds, is actually succeeding in this so-called two-party system.
Talk a little bit about the San Francisco mayoral race, because that would have been the biggest achievement to date.
Well, it would have been the biggest achievement to date, but you know what, Matt? I would say that the campaign that Matt Gonzalez ran and that the Green Party activists and organizers managed was perhaps the biggest achievement we've had to date, even though we didn't actually elect the mayor. Came within a cat's whisker of doing so, of course, but the reality is this. We know that Matt Gonzalez is smart, articulate, and knows issues inside and out. We also know that there is a growing number of people who will participate in electoral politics, not just by voting, but by door knocking and block walking and phone banking. They'll get involved if they feel like they have a candidate that they can support and a chance to actually elect somebody. That's the recipe. Matt's experience and the Green Party's experience in San Francisco is really just a harbinger of things to come. We're going to continue to do that across the country. And let's acknowledge this. Gavin Newsom's decision on issuance of gay marriages in San Francisco was clearly a direct result of the Green Party Matt Gonzalez campaign.
Talk a little bit, if you would, David Cobb, who's running for president on the Green Party ticket, of the failure of the most progressive candidates, at least two of them, in the Democratic primaries to succeed. Dean has now essentially withdrawn. Kucinich is only garnering 1-3% in most states. They were the most vocally anti-war of any of the candidates, and yet they didn't go very far. What does that tell you about the future of progressive politics within the Democratic primary, or is it strictly a personality thing?
Well, Matt, as somebody who worked on Jesse's campaign in 84 and 88, Jerry Brown's campaign in 92, and then watching what's happening to Kucinich and Sharpton, my short answer is this. The Democratic Party's presidential primary is the place where progressive politics goes to die, because energy is expended, money is raised, Just incredible enthusiasm is generated, yet no organizational capacity is built that can be built upon. No capacity is built, no institution is built. That's the reason that I and many others are in the Green Party, because we see that we are building an institution that can last. You know, candidates will come and go. The Green Party is here to stay. And what has happened to Howard Dean and the corporate media's complete destruction of the Dean candidacy is an indication of the fact that progressive politics are going to have to be built outside of the system.
Dean, in stepping out of the race, said that he was going to try to set up one of these organizations for progressive politics. Why are you doubtful that that will succeed?
Because there's no plan for it, Matt. I mean, at the end of the day, there's no way to actually move the Democratic Party from within to a more progressive position. If I heard a plan that said that he was going to do something about that, I'd be excited. I mean, look at what True Majority or MoveOn.org or all the other efforts within the Democratic Party. They're generating tons of money, lots of excitement, lots of energy, but at the end of the day, the corporate money continues to determine who's going to be the Democratic Party's presidential nominee.
What's your take on John Kerry?
John Kerry seems like a noble person. He seems like a very good man. But let's just call it like we see it, Matt. John Kerry is a corporatist. He is for the NAFTA, GATT, WTO trade regime. He voted for the war in Afghanistan. He voted for the war in Iraq. He supports the transnational corporate empire that masquerades as U.S. foreign policy, because there is an empire out there, Matt. It's not an American empire built on American values of liberty, justice, and democracy. It's a corporate empire, and this establishment, both parties support it, and it doesn't even stop there. But John Kerry voted for the Patriot Act, which is a direct attack on the civil liberties of this country. I mean, when people said anybody but Bush, apparently they really meant anybody.
I'm speaking with David Cobb, who's running for the Green Party nomination for president. I'm Matt Rothschild. You're listening to Progressive Radio. How about John Edwards?
Listen, I got to tell you, John Edwards delivers a heck of a speech, Matt, and it's a speech that any progressive could love. I haven't seen any indication of policy positions and actual proposals that would actually back that up. You know, the Green Party is calling unambiguously for universal health care, an immediate end to the occupation of Iraq, publicly funded elections to get corporate money out of politics, a living wage. We're calling for an end to the prison industrial complex and an end to the war on drugs. Those are concrete progressive proposals. I'd love to hear John Edwards match some of those proposals.
Now, you're carrying some of these proposals locally. I mean, that's where some of that action really can be accomplished.
Indeed.
And we're not going to get accomplished in a Republican Congress. Tell me about some of the successes locally.
Well, listen, there have been phenomenal successes locally, from stopping toxic incinerators, championing living wage coalitions and campaigns. And Greens have also been at the very forefront of the movement to pass resolutions, now over 250 of them across this country, against the Patriot Act. And probably the most exciting, most recent one happened in Little Arcata, California, where Greens led the charge to actually, quote, nullify several provisions of the Patriot Act, which that community felt were unconstitutional violations of their civil liberties. You know, it's an exciting, exciting time to be a Green, and I'm proud of the role that the Green Party is playing on the ground at the local level to tangibly make lives better for people.
David Cobb, you say that the Green Party is the electoral arm of the grassroots progressive movement in this country. What aspects of those of that movement, what tributaries, if you will, are feeding into the Green Party right now?
Well, right now, first and foremost, it's got to be the anti-war / peace movement. You know, and frankly, there is not going to be a peace candidate in the general election unless the Green Party has a candidate. We know that. So it's a peace movement, but it's also a newly energized and feminist movement. It's also a deep ecology movement. It's also a racial justice movement. It's a social justice movement. You know, there and there is the nascent stage of a genuine democracy movement where people are experimenting with actual tactics and strategies that actually attempt not only to stop corporate abuse and harm, but actually challenge and delegitimize the entire legal system that enshrines and protects corporate abuse and harm. So all of these different movements ultimately are finding the need to have a political party to carry their message. And so the Green Party is the natural place where many of those people find themselves.
Now, you yourself are working, when you're not doing Green Party stuff, on some of this genuine democracy, anti-corporate work. You want to explain briefly what you're doing there?
Yes, I'd love to. I am on the steering committee for Democracy Unlimited of Humboldt County. You can check us out on the web at duhc.org, stands for Democracy Unlimited of Humboldt County. We're a citizens group that is dedicated to designing local strategies, tactics, and techniques that will fundamentally delegitimize the entire system that protects and enshrines corporate power. We do education work, we do campaigns, and we write, we lecture, we do workshops. And I'd love to hear from listeners because I think that the nascent democracy movement is probably the most exciting of the movements to me because it encompasses all of them.
Now, is this part of the movement to strip corporations of their charter or to make corporations not individuals, according to the Supreme Court?
You got it, Matt. That listen, let's be clear. The notion of corporate personhood is profound, not just as some sort of legal nonsense, but because that is a doctrine that says corporations can claim Bill of Rights protections and constitutional rights that will allow them to overturn democratically enacted laws at the local, state, and national level. So we have to strip we can't just change a few laws. We have to change legal doctrines in this country to protect human rights instead of property rights. We've got to go through the process of building a genuine, broad, and deep movement in this country for people. And Democracy Unlimited of Humboldt County and many other organizations and groups are in the early stages of doing that. And revoking corporate charters is one thing. Overturning the legal doctrine of corporate personhood is another. But also the Commerce Clause of the U.S. Constitution. I mean, there's a whole show that we could do simply on that. And I'd love to come back after this election and talk to you.
We only have a couple minutes left, David Cobb, and I do want you to talk more about the Green Party and its vision, because that's what you're doing right now. And also your appeal to young people, because I would imagine that is a strong constituency for you.
Matt, it's really funny. You know, I go to Democratic Party meetings. I go to Libertarian Party meetings, Green Party meetings, even go to Republican Party meetings from time to time. You know, at a Democratic Party meeting, I'm 41 years old. It is not unusual for me to be one of the youngest people in the room. When I go to Green Party engagements, meetings, it's not unusual for me to be one of the oldest people in the room. So the young people are not only providing real inspiration and perspiration, but also leadership. You know, there are 17-year-olds in elected leadership throughout the country in the Green Party. So they're not just helping us, they are leading us.
And what's your appeal there, do you think?
Well, I think it's a genuine sense of vision and hope. And I want to conclude, if I can, with this big picture thing. Matt, take a look at American history, and American history will show you that everything that is decent and good and systemic in this country came from third parties. And here's that list: the abolition of slavery, women getting the right to vote, the creation of the Social Security Administration, unemployment insurance, workers' compensation laws, pure food and drug laws, the abolition of slavery. Matt, the entire fabric of what we today consider a just, sustainable society was literally woven together by so-called alternative parties of our past.
Well, that's going to have to be the last word. It's an impressive list that third parties have accomplished. David Cobb, thanks for being my guest on Progressive Radio.
Thanks, Matt.
It's been great talking with you.
Today's program is available online at progressive.org. You can also write to us at 409 East Main Street, Madison, Wisconsin, 53703. Our music is by Mufa. Progressive Radio is produced by Elizabeth DiNovella and engineered at Audio for the Arts in Madison, Wisconsin.